Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello again, Dad.
Well, hello again, Tater.
Welcome back to being, well, not where I am. We were together. We didn't record anything, but we were together for a while. That was nice.
We were. You came home and blessed us with a visit, but now you're back in your New York place where I'm here in my West Virginia basement.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do feel like any time we're together, we have very big plans of... We could record an episode, maybe two, and it's like, maybe one, maybe, no.
Nah, we never have time.
Yeah, just not the thing you want to do. Go off alone and research for a couple hours and then sit downstairs in your basement. It's a lot easier to hang out on your porch and drink wine.
Well, and when you were in, too, we had the show going on, and every night except your very last night, we were at the theater from 5:30 until after midnight.
That is true.
So that makes it hard to do much.
Well, yeah. So we took a little. We were off last week, as you may have noticed. Get through all the opening weekend and traveling, but we're back.
Yay!
and I wanted to talk about one of my summertime staples. It's always in my fridge in the summertime, but I think it's something that hasn't really had its modern moment in the sun as much as some other things that are summertime staples. So it's something that I think that you all would really enjoy, and that is Lillet.
Lillet.
Yes.
And I can't say that I've ever heard of Lillet, so take it away.
All right. Well, as you know, you may or may not have heard of Lillet. You may or may not have seen it on the shelf at your liquor store. It's a pretty iconic bottle. It looks sort of like a white wine bottle. The content itself looks like white wine, you know, just a very lovely, simple, gold label, clear bottle. And, what exactly it is, an aromatized wine. So what does that mean? Well, aromatized wines, are fortified wines, which if you remember from our sherry episode, are wines that have had their alcohol volume increased with the addition of a distilled spirit. Usually when we're talking aromatized wines, we're talking like a brandy, a grape-based spirit, but not always, doesn't have to be. Now, the aromatization part of the aromatized wine comes in when that fortified wine is then flavored with fruits, spices, and or herbs. And based on EU regulations, they clock in somewhere between 14.5 and 22% alcohol by volume. And there are several smaller categories under that label. So most common of which, and I think the thing that if you want to give somebody like a 5-second explanation of what is Lillet, a lot of times you'll just hear it's kind of like vermouth. And that is and isn't true, because another one of those aromatized wines is vermouth. Vermouth is, you start with a wine, you fortify it with a neutral grape spirit, usually, and then you infuse it, most famously, with wormwood, among other barks, roots, and spices. But the reason that it's not exactly Lillet is that when you get into the subcategories of aromatized wine, they're differentiated by just that major ingredient in them. So whereas vermouth is sort of recognized as being wormwood focused, Lillet falls under the category quinquina, which is a focus on quinine or quinchona. So you might remember those words from our tonic episode. That is that,
yes,
that compound that's derived from the quinchona bark. And that is, there's a whole category of aromatized wines that center around like being a wine tonic. So kind of a cousin to vermouth, but with a different emphasis.
And if you were somebody like me and you were looking for a bottle to try it, look for something that looks like it says Lillet, because you tell me Lillet and I'm thinking of something different. But if you know that it's a French thing, then you look at that Lillet and say, oh, it's Lillet.
Yes, it's Lillet. And there are other categories in this sort of subcategory. There's also, you've ever seen like cookie Americano? Americano is another category. It has nothing to do with America. It means bitter, and that one typically centers around gentian root, which is another common bittering agent. So In this whole wheelhouse of products, there are a lot of things that can qualify as both. You'll find things that are called vermouth but don't feature wormwood, things that are called Americanos that don't necessarily center on gentian root. You know, there's a lot of flexibility in here. There aren't strict rules. It's just more of the rough ways of categorizing things. But, you know, it's kind of, if somebody wants to know what the difference is between Lillet and vermouth, that's more or less it.
All right. Well, that's good to know.
Now, so of course, getting back to Lillet, now modern Lillet, there are three available versions. There is a Lillet Blanc, a Lillet Rosé, and a Lillet Rouge. The most popular and the longest running one is the Lillet Blanc. That's made with 85% Sauvignon Blanc and Semillon grapes from Bordeaux, France. Those are then fortified with 15% fruit macerations, basically fruit liqueurs, which heavily feature orange peels, so both sweet and bitter orange. That is then rested in oak barrels, and it's bottled at 17% alcohol. Now, the Rosé and Rouge follow very similar treatments. They just have a slightly different build in the wine. So that Rosé introduces some Cab Sauv and Merlot, and the Rouge is just Merlot and Cabernet Sauvignon.
But those introduce tannins, so that kind of changes the taste a little bit.
Yes, they are very different products. All three of them, you can't use them interchangeably behind a bar. They fill similar voids, but it's also it's the same as if you think about sweet vermouth versus dry vermouth. You know, some are made of red wine, some are made of white wine. You can't use sweet vermouth when you need dry vermouth, but you can make riffs off of cocktails by making that replacement. So as long as you adjust other things. Now, ultimately, Lillet is one of those products that holds a unique place all its own on the back bar. Because while there are similar products in the aromatized category, it's really just a unique thing in and of itself. And now as to where it comes from, well, you probably figured it out by now. It's, as Dad mentioned, it's France. And it has some pretty cool... But let's get into some of the history, because Lillet's been around for a fair bit. Lillet was the creation of two brothers and wine merchants, Paul and Raymond Lillet, so it's a family name. They lived in Podensac region of France, just south of Bordeaux. They were inspired by their father, Kerman. He was a late 18th century physician, and he spent a lot of time working in Brazil. Now, once again, if you remember from that tonic episode, we talked about what was going on in the late 18th century. You know, we've got South America, Brazil. There's a lot of malaria going on.
And cinchona.
Exactly. So he had encountered the use of quinine, the use of quinquina, and seen it being used to ease malaria symptoms. And that fear at the time and desire to have like consumable ways or ways of consuming quinine was coupled with this other fear at the time where we have a recognition of waterborne pathogens and of the ability for disease to spread via liquids you consume. You know, we've got like Louis Pasteur doing his work around this time, famed father of bacteriology and microbiology. He was a big proponent of, hey, don't drink the water, drink the wine. So these two ideas kind of combine and marry together into this idea of a tonic wine being a very popular product at the time.
I think that everybody was just trying to find an excuse, you know, to drink liquor for legally or not legally, but, you know, for health purposes.
I don't know if it's like get a waterborne pathogen or get malaria or you can drink wine. Like,
yeah,
I mean, it's a win-win-win.
It's just like when the doctor prescribed a mint julep as an eye-opener.
Now this idea of tonic wines was not revolutionized by Paul and Raymond Lillet. This idea had actually been around for a while. Perhaps it's best credited to Joseph Dubonnet, who's the inventor of Dubonnet Aperitif, another bottle that you may have seen in your liquor store. It's sort of a vermouth itself, still around today. But he came up with his Dubonnet and this concept of a wine with tonic in it. Years before, a couple decades before, in the 1840s. But the big difference that the brothers introduced with theirs is that while a lot of these other tonic wines and vermouths, they were based in red wine and they had very heavy spice and herb characteristics to them, the brothers opted for a white wine and for very bright citrusy liqueurs to counterbalance the bitterness of the quinine. So they made this very light, floral, perfumey, very palate-friendly white wine beverage. And of course, they were making it using Bordeaux wine, which was, even at its time, uniquely known for its wine. So it was already considered a quality product.
Yeah, so that was a good quality wine they were using, not just what was left over in the bottom of the barrel.
Exactly, huh? Yeah. So you had good wine, you had a unique formula, really kind of just like launched its own unique identity. Like I said, it's held to this day. I don't think anything really quite competes with Lillet at being Lillet, because it's just its own thing. Now, so in 1872, which is imprinted on the bottle, the Lillet brothers created Quina Lillet. Quina is referencing to that original name for the tree that produces the quinine bark. Now, It took them about a decade to get the product right and get everything in order to get it on shelves. So the first bottling didn't take place until 1887. And of course, as I mentioned, its association with Bordeaux, its very popular, timely recipe, and its unique qualities made it a big success on a wider market. So all throughout, first kind of Africa and Europe were super into Lillet.
Plus it's curing malaria.
Yeah, well, you know, it's maybe not. Probably not carrying enough quinine to actually combat malaria, but it's hard to say.
But you can try, can't you?
now, it really had, during this time, a lot of these products that are designed for medicinal reasons are making the shift to, you know, just for pleasure. And that really takes place a lot more in the 1900s. So like in the 1920s, there was just this explosion of really smart advertising around Lillet as a luxury product, as a product for enjoyment. And it's really, these ads are really striking. They're all over the internet, but like they had like very striking, beautiful ads painted at the time by French artists Robert Wolff and Roger Seguin. Like they just, you know, Art Nouveau paintings, these striking color palettes. They also had magazine ads that featured renowned bartender Harry Craddock, which tied Lillet to the most prominent cocktail programs in the world. They also had a catchy phrase, "Ask for Lillet," that adorned like wall murals in major cities. So really one of these, you know, and you see like a lot of these products that took off around the 1920s, this is really what they had going for them, were these just striking, very artistic, very modern ad campaigns. Campari had one similarly, and just very, prominent at the time. Now, over the years, other Lillet bottlings have hit the market. They introduced a drier Lillet in 1945 to compete with dry vermouth. That one sort of caught on. In 1962, that's where the red Lillet, the Lillet Rouge, was introduced to the market. And that was because Lillet had also just started being sold to the American market heavily. And Americans at the time really liked red wine. So they wanted there to be a red component to go along with the white component to meet the American marketplace.
Now, what I read, I may be wrong on this, but what I read was they anticipated that the American market would be more accepting of it, as opposed to the American market pushed back and said, can't you do something with and add some red wine? They kind of anticipated because of the popularity of red wine in America.
Yeah, that's what they anticipated, and that's why they made it.
Yeah. 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 Not like they got feedback saying, hey, why can't you make this with some red stuff?
No, because Lillet actually sold very well in America. Lillet Blanc did. So this was just more of like to capitalize on the American palate. But it already was becoming a popular ingredient just in its original form in American cocktail bars. This was just an
added benefit. I think that's pretty ingenious of them, though, to look at it that way. Instead of just saying, we've got a good product, they can like it or leave it. They said, let's do something that they might be more excited about. I think that was pretty progressive and good, good sales strategy.
Well, and it's smart, too, because there is that comparison to vermouth, and people understand vermouth. They understand that there is a white and a red, so it's almost like a void in the market to just say, oh, well, this is our red thing, and people go with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, in the 1970s, it got a little bit of a makeover. They dropped the Quina from the name, because Quina was sort of becoming associated with just any tonic or aromatized wine. And so they really wanted to build their brand around that family name because that was something that couldn't be infringed upon, you know? Just, it's mm-hmm. Lillet. It's its own thing. And then, of course, the most significant change happened in 1985. This is when Lillet was reformulated. So they wanted to reformulate it for a couple reasons. They wanted it to be more sustainable and more consistent. They also were tinkering with sort of the changing palette of the time. You know, we're talking about the 80s, and I mean, definitely in America, as we've talked about, you couldn't really sell aggressive spirits. So like an aggressive quinine spirit wouldn't have done as well. So they had, they reduced the quinine. They also reduced the sugar a fair bit because you didn't have to have so much sugar to offset the quinine. So they kind of allowed it to be a bit more heavy on the fruity citrus notes and less on the bitter and the sweet, which is the Lillet we have today. And then in 2011, jumping on that rosé trend that just won't quit, they introduced Lillet Rosé, which, as I mentioned, is sort of the rosé version of Lillet.
And it rhymes.
Lillet Rosé, yeah. I think it's also the prettiest. They're all beautiful. I mean, they all look beautiful in the bottle, but the combination of the soft pink with the gold label and the red title, it's just a really beautiful, striking bottle.
It's worth drinking for the color alone.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're a fan of rosé already, like, you should get some Lillet Rosé because it's fun to play around with. as far as how to drink Lillet, throughout the ages, drinking Lillet has been a pretty simple affair. On the rocks with a twist, perhaps some soda to make it a spritz. The gin in French, which was sort of a simple just combination of gin and Lillet, was popular. But, you know, that's just sort of modeled after a martini. Really nothing too complex. Now, in the 30s, Harry Craddock, that bartender we mentioned before, when he wasn't posing for their ads, he gave us perhaps the second most famous Lillet cocktail, and one of the more complicated ones. That's the Corpse Reviver number 2. So that has gin, Lillet, orange liqueur, and lemon with a dash of absinthe.
The name is great. Corpse Reviver number 2. What happened to Corpse Reviver number 1? Did it flop?
Yeah, basically, it didn't flop, but it's just not as popular. They both existed at the same time, and, you know, both were, like, popular built, so you would ask for number 1 or number 2. And it was kind of more considered a family of cocktails, like Corpse Reviver. So they were very strong, but they were very citrusy. So kind of a good, like, afternoon hangover cure was a Corpse Reviver. Oh. This idea of having endless Corpse Revivers didn't stick around. We kind of ended up with just number 2 being the only one that every bartender knows, and number 1 kind of getting some play on the occasion. But we're not up to, like, Corpse Reviver number 39.
Like Baskin Robbins of Corpse Survivors.
Yeah, exactly. But I do want to, as I was thinking about the Corpse Reviver number 2, despite its silly name, one of the reasons I think that we don't have a slew of Lillet cocktails, and I mean, they're out there, but there aren't like a ton of like go-to call drinks you could order at any bar that any bartender would know with Lillet in it. And a lot of that is because Lillet is a very soft spirit. You know, it gets lost very easily in drinks that aren't built to complement it. And how smart, I mean, it was made by Craddock, he was a brilliant bartender, but how smart of this build it is, because when you look at modern Lillet, the elements it has aromatics, well, gin has aromatics, it has acidity, well, your lemon juice is going to have acidity, and then it has citrus notes, well, your orange liqueur is going to have citrus notes. So he really paired it with three things that just highlight the other flavors already in Lillet. It's a very smart kind of cradling of Lillet in this drink, which I think is cool. But of course,
yeah, just in it, they're just like enhancers of what's already there.
Exactly. And it's all equal parts, so it's really easy to remember. But the most famous Lillet cocktail, as I mentioned, that was the second. Number 2, second biggest. The most famous was not made by a bartender. It was made up by Ian Fleming in his 1953 novel Casino Royale, of course, James Bond novel. And that is the Vesper Martini. Have you ever heard of a Vesper, Dad?
I have never heard of that. I mean, I've heard of a Vesper, but I've never heard of a Vesper Martini, and it's surprising to me that it wasn't made up behind a bar, that an author thought it up. I guess at some point he must have had one, or somebody made one for him, but he probably named it to make it more James Bond-like.
Well, and you know, knowing that the gin and French was popular around the same time, so this idea of gin and Lillet had already existed. So we're not going too far out of the line here, but to quote the novel, what James Bond orders, and he's making this up on the spot. He says, a dry martini, one in a deep champagne goblet. Oui, monsieur, just a moment. 3 measures of Gordon's, 1 of vodka, 1/2 a measure of quinoa Lillet. Shake it very well until it's ice cold, then add a large slice of lemon peel. Got it? Certainly, monsieur. The barman seemed pleased with the idea. So that's from the novel. It's an interesting build. Because if you take it in ounces, which probably James Bond would have had a big drink, so it's like a 3-to-1 gin to vodka with just a 1/2 ounce of Lillet. Very dry, very boozy martini, with the Lillet obviously subbing in for vermouth. So, and shaken.
Shaken, not stirred.
James Bond's damn shaken martinis that ruined martinis for decades. but if you have you can order a Vesper in a bar. Most bars are capable of making it. Although it is interesting, and I would say arguably, because I've heard bartenders argue over this many times, is that you can't actually make a Vesper as it was in the book, because so the book came out, like I said, 1953. Lillet changed.
Quinoa Lillet.
Yeah, so it changed formulas.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of people sub in cookie Americano, which if you remember, I described the Americano family as being Gentian root, which it's not quinine, but it is a much more bitter root. So you still have that kind of backbone of bitterness and that balance of sweetness in cookie Americano that modern Lillet lacks. So the idea is it stands up a lot more in the drink. You know, with that half ounce measure, that small measure, Lillet is not really going to do much, but if you have a...
No, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah
with that much gin and vodka already present, that 1/2 ounce of Lillet isn't going to do much of anything.
You get a little hint.
That's window dressing at that point.
Well, and I've seen a lot of bartenders try to sort of reinvent the Vesper. So you use cookie Americano in place, or you use a higher pour of Lillet and then a small pour of cookie, or you bring bitters in because bitters are going to give you some instant, you know, kind of bitterness, obviously. But I don't know. I mean, I've had Vespers the way they're described in the book, made with modern Lillet, and they're still pretty nice. I think a bigger pour of Lillet is nice, but, you know, it is a bit of a lost cocktail, which I actually think is cool.
Yeah.
And that the cocktail's mentioned again. It has some screen time in both the 2006 and 2008 James Bond films, Casino Royale and then Quantum of Solace. So,
all right. I've never picked up on that or didn't realize what was involved in that.
Yeah. And it's named after his love interest in Casino Royale.
Vesper.
Yeah. Now, there was another discerning fictional fan of Lillet that you may know of.
Ernest Hemingway?
No. Ernest Hemingway does not pop up. Lillet is too light for him.
Oh, okay. He's been in most of the drinking, so that must have been him.
Actually, no. Hannibal Lecter.
Oh, that's right. I did read that.
Yep. Uh-huh. He's named it as perhaps his favorite beverage, although he likes his simple with ice and a slice of orange.
Oh, well, I thought you could say a slice of brain.
No. I mean, I don't know what part of the anatomy best pairs with Lillet. Like I said, it's pretty light. It would be very easily overtaken by anything too gamey, anything too minerally. That would be hard. You'd have to have something very, very subtle.
And evidently liver goes with Chianti.
Yeah. So, I don't know what part of the human body pairs best with Lillet. I didn't think about that going into the episode.
A nice stack of pancreas.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I have to think about that. An odd nonfiction bit of pop culture. The Duchess of Windsor in the 50s is credited with introducing Lillet to Paris, or popularizing it, rather, because she supposedly traveled with a bottle of it in her luggage at all times.
Well,
so there you go.
Don't be caught without it.
Yeah. So this is a little sort of a little rundown of Lillet. As I mentioned, you can find all three kinds on the market. I've seen stores that will just stock the Lillet Blanc. It's not everywhere that you can get the Rouge and the Rosé. And I think that the Blanc is the most versatile. I think that, you know, if you want to get a bottle to try out, I would start with the Blanc. And I really do think that the kind of entry point for Lillet is it's very easy to get into, to learn how to work with. Because unlike some of these ingredients we bring to the table on the show that either have a very high price point or they're hard to find, or, you know, you kind of have to know cocktails and have other ingredients to work with them, Lillet is a very low barrier for entry. It's cheap. It runs you about $20 a bottle. It's readily available. It's a Pernod Ricard release, so it's like kind of everywhere, at least the Blanc is. You can start off just trying it on the rocks and work from there.
Yeah, wine enthusiast thinks highly of it. I read an article that they were talking about how versatile it is, can be used in things. It's a good thing to use in a spritz that you put together for like a summery type drink. And, you know, they say that it's a good thing to keep behind your bar because it's so versatile.
Although, I would say if it's behind your bar, it should be behind the fridge in your bar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. This is one thing.
I think they were just kind of saying that as a term, not as a correct actual thing.
But it is good to note that I do think that, you know, kind of if there's one caveat to the versatility of Lillet is that much like vermouth, it will lose its potency after. I'd give it a couple weeks, maybe a month after you open it, and you want to keep it in the fridge. It's not going to go bad. It's just going to go off, like just like vermouth does. But you can, I have had a hard time keeping a bottle of Lillet in my house for more than a month. It's very drinkable.
I said, somebody keeps coming in and drinking it, huh?
I don't know. Maybe Jack. He's a very fancy man. He might like Lillet.
Yeah, Jack Lillet.
Yeah.
That's like just like that old exercise guy from the 60s, Jack Lalanne.
Oh. I don't know who that is.
I can remember my mother when I was a little kid. He was like a Richard Simmons back in the day. But he was further back than that. And he always wore these jumpsuits. And he would lead all the women in the exercises that they would do. And they'd stand in front of the TV and do exercise. I remember watching old Jack Lalanne. Man, he had some biceps on him, too.
Well, that's a nice memory.
Yeah. Good, Jack Lalanne in his jumpsuit.
Jumpsuit is nice biceps. All right. Yeah. Well, that's pleasant for you, Dad. Well, my Jack does not have, I don't think a cat can have biceps. I've seen some beefy cats, but Jack's not beefy. He's a little boy.
He's a little boy.
He's a little wimpy boy. But there you go. So I absolutely encourage you. Some products I would not encourage everybody to go buy. You know, like I said, some are more aggressive. This is not. Anyone could pick up a bottle. Low price point, readily available. Great summer drinking. Try it on the rocks. If you don't like that, add some soda. If you don't like that, look up a popular cocktail. Make it into a martini. It can go everywhere from very dry to very sweet. Just incredibly, as Dad mentioned, incredibly versatile ingredient.
Well, all right. I like that they were drinking it to avoid getting sick and stuff back in the older days.
I know.
I'd say that kind of reminded me. I came across a fact on my fact calendar that gives me these weird facts from different places that it kind of puts me in mind of. Said that a program was launched in Belgium in 2001 to replace sugary drinks and soda in school lunches with beer. They were trying to keep kids from drinking sugary sodas and stuff like that, so they started giving them beer.
That worked?
You know, guess, yeah. Yeah. Sometimes you can ask for two milks with your lunch. Maybe you could ask for two beers. I don't know.
I mean, are they those super low alcohol, though, like kid beers that they have in Europe?
I don't know. I didn't say specifically. That was all the information I got right there.
It's an interesting crossroad, things that are good for you and then alcohol. Like there's a lot of crossover there. You know, we understand the health benefits of consuming like things that have been fermented. But then obviously there are downsides.
Well, and of course, if it was Guinness, of course, it's been proven. Guinness is good for you. Just read any ad from them.
It's right there. Right there on the ad. That seal knows, so you should know, too.
That's right. You can't argue with a seal. And it's a seal of approval.
Well, and Lillet, designed by chemists and doctors and, you know, meant to fight waterborne diseases and malaria, but now it can just be your nice summer sipper.
Recommended for over 100 years.
Yeah. And if you can, obviously the Blanc is the one that you're going to find most places, but if you can get a hold of the Rosé, the Rouge is a little, it's not, I don't want to say it's hard to work with. I think it's not, it's great for the fall and winter. There are a lot of things I've done with it for, you know, heavier cocktails, but for summertime, the Rosé is really, it's really great. And over on the video, we will just be mixing with the Blanc on the video. I usually have the Rosé in my house, so I might show it off to you. But we'll be making some classic drinks. We'll make a Vesper. We'll make a Corpse Reviver number 2. We'll try it straight. See how Dad, of course, famously does not like wine, but we'll see if he likes Lillet.
This sounds a little different. We'll give it a try.
I think you'd like it. It's like wine with orange liqueur in it.
All right. You know?
It's like a... Well,
I'll keep an open mind and an open mouth.
Well, all right. That's all I ask.
All right.
Well, all right. Well, thank you very much for joining us this week on Neat. Thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you, Tater, for having me. Once again, I learned something new.
Always. And, of course, if you would like to support this podcast, we have a Patreon. We give out stickers and coasters. We have a new Bespoke Cocktail Club that you can send us your drink desires, and we make you specialty videos where we make special drinks for you. The first one of those just went up this weekend. It was super fun. If you want to find us on social media, we are Neat Boozecast on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to email us, you can email us at neattheboozecast@gmail.com. And if you want to find us on Facebook, Dad has a group.
Neat the Boozecast group.
There you go. You can talk to Dad. Show off your cocktails. Share your creations with other neatos. That's what I'm calling y'all.
We're neatos. Better than being SpaghettiOs.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Anything against SpaghettiOs. I watched an episode of Chopped last night with the SpaghettiO popsicles as a secret ingredient. That's a thing. Another way to cool off. I'd rather drink the light. All right. Well, hey, I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been...
Eric Clapton was singing about when he said "Lay, Lady, Lay." Maybe he was just too drunk to say "Lay." I need some more "Lay." He said, "I need more Lay, Lay, Lay."